to call it the divine or, you know, God or, you know, or any thoughts that have come up in what I've said already. So we can get kind of get things rolling like that. Again, I'm JP. I've said enough already. And let me go this way.
My name is Jerry from South Park. With the intro journey, sort of certainly, as you said, moved away from brought up being Catholic and now much more Eastern traditions, say Taoist, or the shamanic Native American traditions is sort of where I find myself drawn to.
My name is Pepe. I was brought up in as a Catholic, but many things happened, so I'm free of the religion right now. My concept is the real God. Whatever we want to talk to God, we talk to ourselves.
My name is Louis, and God, this whole thing follows me everywhere I go. I don't really believe in the conventional God anymore. As a kid, I was allowed to go to every church, and I thought it was all bullshit. It was all the same. You know, each church just did things a little bit different. You know, I went to Holy Rollers, I went to Mormons, I went to everything. And to me, what I got out of it was just a lot. There was a lot of writing, and it was all done by man. And that's just my take on it, my opinion. But I do believe that there's a force, and I don't even really think that I'm supposed to understand what it is. Scientists say that energy is the one constant in the universe, and I think we're all made of energy. And I think when energy is the one thing that never actually leaves, it just changes form. And so me, people die, that spark of energy that they have is gone. I mean, if you've ever seen anybody dead, you know that energy, that force is not there any longer, and there's just basically a shell left. And so I've kind of just, you know, thought about this, and that's what I've come, my conclusion is. As far as, like, you know, the force, changing everything, and, you know, to make things work out a certain way for me, I don't think I buy that either. I think my living in the now and staying in the now and accepting life on life's terms is the magic, the hocus pocus. That's the thing. It's like anything that was hocusy pocusy when I was a kid, I didn't buy it. You know, rising from the dead, hocus pocus.
Santa Claus.
Yeah. I didn't buy any of that shit. It was just too, you know, I've never seen anything, you know, and I know it is about faith and fear. When I am afraid of something, it's because I have no, I'm not in my faith right at the moment. And I do have faith. I have faith that things will always work out no matter what. That's my faith. And it's as simple to me, in my simple little brain, okay? And believe me, it's simple up there. It has to be really easy, and that's what it is. When I'm afraid, I'm not in faith. And when I'm in faith, I'm not afraid of anything. Almost anything. And that's what I think.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Go for it. Who are you?
Okay. My name is Mark. I live here in North Park. And I have never believed in God. I wasn't raised in a religious home. I wasn't exposed to church or that whole experience. And, you know, if there is something called the God gene, it did not end up in my genome at all. Over the years, I have grown a good deal more tolerant of the whole idea of God and spirituality and their importance to the lives of other people. You know, I'm embarrassed at some of the nasty things I used to say about religion and people believed in it. But so I think I've grown in that sense. But I, you know, still don't believe in anything more than, you know, we are born, we live, we die, these are all biological processes, and there's, you know, nothing beyond that. But the husk that Louis talked about is nothing more than a burned out light bulb, and the light's gone. But at the same time, I must say that I'm also appalled at the way certain scientists have tried to say, well, we can make a better creation than the one nature evolved over billions of years. And I would say that I think the concept of evolution implies a certain degree of, and I am not comfortable with this word, but it's the only one I can think of, a reverence for nature and for what has evolved over billions of years. But, you know, one thing that appalls me about the whole idea of genetic engineering is it's saying, okay, creation, God, nature, science, whatever it was, we can do better than you are, than you have, and we can't.
Evening, my name is Scott, I live in North Park. My mom was did attend a church when she was young. I think she gave that up when she met my dad and got married and such, so I grew up in a house that was not religious. And I did go to a Christian church, tried that out for quite a while, and then that didn't seem to resonate with me, so I stopped going. It wasn't until a couple decades later, I was living in L.A. and found the Hollywood Church of Religious Science. And I went to go hear a friend sing because he was performing there. The message that Reverend Pam gave sounded like she was talking right to me. Hmm. I said, that's never happened before. So I said, all right, well, let's flip a coin, go back next week, see if the same thing. Yep, it was. All right, third time's a charm. Nope, it was my girl's going right there. I kept going and volunteered there for several years until they sold the building and moved into the valley. I did try the what's that church down here on First
Universal?
Yeah.
Universal Spirit Center.
Yeah, that did not resonate with me all that well. But certainly it's worth another shot. And there's specific something or other that Maggie went to. I'd like to go check that out. So that does resonate with me, and I do try to follow the parts that I was able to understand with that.
Okay, they say that they go to religion because they are afraid of hell, and they go to spirituality because they have been in hell. So I think being a spiritual being is important because it changes your values, your beliefs. It moves you from being just a piece of dust to be part of the universe. I believe in spirituality. That's me, Alfonso from Tijuana.
All right. Okay.
And I'm Richard. I live in North Park. And I was born into a very religious family. Most of them have a basis in real strong Baptist churches. And my parents sort of evolved into Presbyterian, and they were very, very active in the church. And I didn't pay much attention to it, but I remember being in Sunday school and looking at these pictures of the blue-eyed blonde Jesus and feeling like something just wasn't connecting there. By the time I was 12 years old, of course, being an obedient son, I must have been submissive even back then. I went ahead and joined the church, even though I knew that was not the direction I wanted to go. Because I would sit in church on Sundays, and I would look around, and I would see these people, and there was all this kind of nattering going on that I was aware of. You know, oh, look at her, or look at him, oh, do you know they got what? Well, I'm going to get this, and I thought, you know, I don't think that God would want us to sit, create this gorgeous world and then have us sit indoors on these hard benches and be gossiping with each other. There's something wrong here. So I told my parents about it, and eventually kind of got accepting of the idea that although I had joined the church, if I chose when I was 16 that I didn't want to continue going, I didn't have to. So they went to church on Sundays, and I didn't. I stayed home alone and took walks in the woods and did things like that. When I got into the Navy at 18, I decided here was an opportunity to explore all kinds of things. So every church, every place I was stationed, and when I went overseas and all these other ports, they gave me lots of opportunities to explore different churches. I went into all of them, and of course, I didn't know the language when I was overseas, but I just sort of felt, I absorbed. And when I came back to the States, I even dated a Mormon woman for a while. That was interesting. But when I came back to the States, I thought, I'm a spiritual person, not a religious one. I got to find some place to work this out. And so I got involved with groups that meditated for years, and of course I was tying that in with yoga, which was nice. But I kind of got away from it for a while, and I think that the spiritual nature that's been sort of sleeping inside of me is calling me back again. That's my direction, spirituality.
Hi, I'm Lee. I live in Hillcrest. I was born and raised pagan, so just about everything Louis said, I could say again. I have a strong belief in life, the energy of life, the essence of nature, respecting, you know, other people and everything around us. You know, just because it's the ocean doesn't mean it doesn't have a soul of its own or a life of its own. Just because it's clouds and you can't really touch it doesn't mean that it doesn't have some kind of significance or some kind of force behind it. The life energy, I feel it all around me. That's the constant of the universe, like we said. As they say, we all came from stardust, and that's where we end up. And, you know, I hear people with religious backgrounds, they condemn homosexuals or people they don't like or other religions or pagans or, you know, whatever. And they use things like you're going to hell. And I sit there and I think, you know what, I'm created from stardust, from a supernova. You know, that's, if I can survive that, you know, I think I can deal with hell. So it's not really something that I worry about so much. But yeah, that's kind of where my is. I feel that everything that you give out is what you're going to get back. If you give out positive energy, you're going to get it back. If you treat people nicely, they're going to treat you nicely. Yeah, you're going to get some bad apples, people that are going to treat you like shit. But you know, that's on them. They're going to get that back. They're going to. That's their reality. And when that spark leaves their body and as their brain shuts down and their synapses start flickering, and the centers of their brain that contain memory that makes them recall the flashes of their life, you know, and they see all the nasty things they did in their life, I think that's their hell. That brief moment when they die and their brain shuts down and they see those things that they did bad, I think that's their hell. And once that spark goes and becomes another something else, you know, their soul is free, and, you know, that's punishment enough. And for those that have lived a good life, and when they die and they see all the wonderful things and they feel the love around them, I think that's the best heaven there is.
That was nice. I'm Eli, I live in North Park. I was raised Christian. We went to Baptist school for a year and failed. No, it's possible. I'm a bad kid, I guess. But I was raised in church all the way up to I joined the military, and that's when I kind of figured out I was gay officially, and came out, and my family was very anti-gay, you know, going to hell, blah, blah, blah. I just accepted to be myself, be happy with who I was, stopped going to church for a long, long time. I started going to school, I go to City College, and I got to take a world religion class, and that was very opening for me, because I got to learn a lot of stuff about my own religion I was raised in, and a lot of stuff they don't tell you, a lot of stuff you don't really do the research on yourself, but you're just taught one way. And like you said, this whole fear-based idea, and you're going to hell, and you're doing things wrong, and I never felt like I fit in, so I was just like, well, maybe I'm just not made for religion. But the world religion class taught me a lot of just about pretty much everything, and it was able. You know, I was able to go to a Jewish service, a Shabbat service, and go to other things and just learn. And that helped me learn a lot more about myself. I'm not necessarily spiritual. I just think that there's a reason for everything. Like you said, the whole karma and being good. And I think it's good to be able to have that in your mind and to treat people with respect. I don't really follow anything specifically. I'm very open. I'll go to anything if you ask me. I just don't really follow one specific way of teaching, but I do respect all of them.
Mm-hmm. Keith, North Park. It's kind of funny because growing up, I can remember my grandmother on my dad's side, you know, it's going over to her house for the weekend, and she'd have people come in and she'd do fortune telling, you know, for people. And I'd go spend the weekend with my mom's mom on that side, and she knew everything about herbs, you know, anything about food, like how to cure any kind of like little ailment. And I remember my parents talking about how my mom had like a goat as a pet because they traveled. You know, they were going from place to place, you know, getting, like, work and stuff like that. And my dad had similar stories. And then knowing that they actually were at the same, like, they called it a camp, that they knew each other from a camp. And then later, when they got older, they met each other again at another camp at another state. And when we were growing up, we didn't go to any church in our family. We had tarot cards, and we had a Ouija board, and we had all kinds of other, like, just fun stuff, like a crystal ball, and, you know, as kids, you don't really think about anything like that, and our parents didn't really give us, like, any type of direction. Those were, like, toys to us, you know, and other kids were scared of women, you know? But, you know, we played with it, we didn't think anything about it. Later, we start, like, really talking about stuff more, and we're, like, you know, we don't even know, like, what our gene is or anything. So, you know, we send it in, and it comes back with, like, a whole bunch of, like, just stuff, like, everything. And then we start reading, and it kind of gives you, like, it basically came out like gypsy. And then we're, like, sitting there, and we're, like, oh, my God. We're, like, conferenced in on the phone, and we're, like, this totally makes sense now. All these stories that we thought were just, like, these, like, mm-hmm. weird stories are true. But, I can remember my mom knowing, like, 2 days before her sister was going to die, that she had this urge to call her and talk to her, and they hadn't talked for a while. And she said, you know, I just want to tell you a lot of stuff, and they got to talk about a lot of really good things. And I can remember, like, my mom, I was younger, and I can remember my mom saying, I just have to call her. You know, we were at dinner, and she was like, I just have this horrible feeling, and I just need to call her and talk to her and, you know, say things that need to be said. And, you know, and then 2 days later, you know, her sister dies. And as a kid, you know, we were all like, that's weird. You know, that's kind of odd. Mm-hmm. We can remember my dad, you know, getting up the next, like, in one morning, and he's freaking out. He's like, I need to get in touch with my brother Jack. Something's wrong. He calls over to his family, finds out that, yes, he was, like, in a car accident. I was almost abducted when I was younger, and I kept thinking over and over and over for my mom to come get me. But my mom wasn't supposed to be around for another couple of hours. And my mom showed up. And the guy just, like, disappeared. So, a lot of just interesting stuff, you know. So, as an adult, you know, I do tarot cards and stuff like that. And, you know, they're not, I don't think of them like when you read, like, the meaning behind the tarot cards, which talks about, like, all these different gods and all this other stuff. I kind of throw all that out and really take, like, the affirmations that it's talking about and maybe, like, the outside influences that are coming to you at the time. Because it just gives you, like, not that it's really accurate, but it gives you something to think about, like, mm-hmm. Like going to a therapist. because they're so vague, it could really apply to just about anything in your life. But it is like a good kind of therapy session, so I could see why a lot of people go and have readings done like that, because it makes you think about something you hadn't really thought about, and maybe that is really like a negative thing coming at you at the moment, and you need to like kind of reassess like how you are going to approach it. So it's not necessarily like a religion kind of thing, but as far as like knowing that there's a lot more than what we see tangible, and understanding like when you got that gut feeling like, you know, I probably shouldn't go to that store today, I should probably go to this store, because there's this nagging feeling, or you feel like you need to talk to somebody that you haven't talked to because it might be the last time you get to talk to them, you should probably go ahead and make the call. But anyways, that's me.
All right. Okay.
My mom and I live in Silver City. I was raised Catholic, and I've been an atheist my entire adult life, but I've only been willing to admit it, even to myself, for the last couple of years. I'm not a neuroscientist, but I have a layman's curiosity, and suddenly we've evolved to assume agency in the world. If you're running naked in the grasslands in Africa and you see something moving in the grass, you can assume it's just the wind, and if it's a lion, you're dead. Or you can assume it's a lion, and if you're wrong, no big deal. So our minds have evolved to assume agency and to see agency. And that's, I think, where this idea that there's something out there and it speaks to me, I believe that's where it comes from. But that's my opinion. I will point out that the last thing I wanted to say on that is that I find being an atheist extremely liberating, because when my life becomes mine, I don't owe it to a god, I don't owe it to a universal creator of some generic species. It's mine, and I can make it as happy or as unhappy as I want, and it also makes it very precious, because I don't get another one. I ain't going to be singing hymns in some, you know, on some cloud. When it's over, it's over. So it's very precious.
My name's Stephen. I live in North Park. I was raised a conservative Jew. I had a really miserable experience during my bar mitzvah. My rabbi was a tyrant and a bully. Shortly after that, the religion stopped resonating for me. My nephew had a bar mitzvah a couple of years ago, and it was joyous, and I was very jealous because I saw how it should have been for me. And it wasn't. And 7 years ago, I started practicing Buddhism. And it's met my spiritual needs.
My name is Tom, and I live in North Carolina. Once I turned 50, I began to realize, like many of us who turn 50, that our life is at least half over, for sure, because most people live past 100. So now we're living in, we have less years ahead of us than we have behind us. There is a question that I have been asking as of late, and the question is, there are really only two choices. Either we are mortal beings or we're not. You know, there's like any other question, you either are something or you are not. And so I guess the question really is, if you were a mortal being, whether or not we are God or we're different souls that have occupied these bodies for this ride, if we were immortal, we're probably bored shitless. So the real question is, would you want to be immortal if you could be immortal? Would you want to live forever if you could never die? And in fact, what was there before the universe? There is no presumed beginning of time. There's no presumed end of time, maybe beginning and end of the universe. But the real question is, are we immortal or are we not? If we're not and we die, then nothing matters. Because once you're dead, it didn't matter, so we should all just become serial killers and have a nice ride. And then shoot ourselves in the head and be done. Because at the end, we're done. And there was nothing worth living for because we're done. So, faced with that alternative of it really being incredibly meaningless, my belief system is choosing to say,
I just, for some reason, don't want to be that serial killer. There are days at the office, but they're not that bad. And so, what we are taping this, aren't we? Anyway.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. We will edit. We'll edit.
Yeah.
We have edited.
So I'm starting to favor the fact that we put all. Maybe we did this. Maybe we created this. Maybe this is an amusement park ride for us. Maybe it's a joke. Maybe we're bored shitless and we've done this a bunch of other times. And maybe we've. There are a lot of possibilities out there. The only thing I know for sure is anything that I think I know, given my size in the universe, is absolutely guaranteed to be wrong. I will not be right about it. By definition, I just won't be right. So that's what I think. I was born Catholic, and I have a science background.
I'm Stuart from the college area. It's an awesome topic, by the way. I look at religion. I was brought up Baptist. I thoroughly believed when I was younger in God, in punishment. Everything seemed to be, at the time, I think, shame-based. And I, you know, viewed it in retrospect as a way to control and socialize people. I still feel like I should really believe that, and also I think that we buy into religious belief systems because we're looking for meaning in trying to make sense of everything. And I think, you know, we have evolved as to find patterns that are meaningful that are will drive our success. And I also do believe, I'm an atheist, by the way. I've been an atheist for as long as I can remember now, probably 20 years. And I remember when I was in college, I was in a men's discussion, gay men's discussion group, and somebody said they were an atheist, and I was like, wow, that's huge. Because for me, it was really impactful because he was very comfortable in it, and it was so against the norm. People didn't profess that back then. Very taboo to say that. Now I'm very comfortable in saying that. But I also believe in spirituality, which is kind of a contradiction, and let me explain this. I do believe that it's brain-based. I'm a scientist. I have read a lot about neuroscience, and there are, I believe, parts of the brain that support religious processes. And, I mean, for instance, if you take psilocybin, which I have. I've had religious experiences, profound, life-changing. But I still believe that's a chemical basis for something fundamental in the brain that responds to religious beliefs, letting go of the ego, becoming one with the universe. And we want to find connections, and I think that's what it's all about, and transcending. And I think you touched on it early on, what this group means and what we're all looking for, I think, is transcendence from the everyday drudgery, the struggle. I view life as struggle, ultimately. And we want to find ways to get beyond that. And I think just the S&M being BD and so on, fetish community, is looking for answers in different ways and trying to find that transcendent zone. That's it.
Jay, San Diego, and my parents were not religious, but they raised me to think I was a god. They've always told me I was a god, and I've always conducted myself as if I was a god, up until 87. Then my lover 10 years dies. I know I wasn't a god, I was a piece of shit. But other than that, I've always, you know, thought of myself as a god. I still do, you know. I'm the only one that, you know, I don't know, I just think of myself. Although I do feel something about spirituality because when I was younger, I was always able to, I didn't call them auras. Now I just call it bearing. And that's how I, because people, I judge people how they stand, how they move, how they walk. And so that's why I'm always been good at reading people out. So that's about as close to religion as I get, other than me being a god.
Okay. Who said? Somebody said humble.
Okay, take me down. My name is Michael. I live in La Mesa. I was raised Southern Baptist, which I just find kind of humorous now. I just remember as a child them pointing to me and telling me I'm going to hell. I'm like, what did I do? Now I'm basically I think I have the mind of a scientist. I mean, it's like, you know, a growing tree is not proof of God, nor is a book written by a bunch of old men. It's not proof of God either. I tend to think of, you know, like the laws of thermodynamics, energy. Energy cannot be created or destroyed. So this energy that you are right now, when you're lying there, some energy that has left your body has gone somewhere, but none of us knows where it goes. And that's kind of how I just kind of throw it up in the air. You know, you just become part of whatever you were before. So I really think that the energy is always going to be there. It's just, you just don't know. And I kind of, and as you get older, you just kind of accept there's just so much you don't know and you're never going to know. So you just try to get on with your life and try to be a good person. That's kind of, I just, you know, one of those laws that you learn, you know, that had a big poster in the old days, like everything you need to know you learned in kindergarten. And it's kind of true.
I'm Jeff, and I live down near Lemon Grove. I'll try to speak up. I grew up as a Methodist, but it's just a part of, like, I went to church, went to Sunday school, and we never discussed religion. The topic never came up at home. Just never discussed. We went to church and everything was never discussed. We never said prayers at home. So, I mean, it was just kind of like, you know, you go to elementary school and you go to high school, you know, it's just part of my growing up experience. And I kind of believed in it, in the God, because that's the only thing I'd ever heard about. You know, with never any discussion from anybody I'd ever heard of, except perhaps different religions. So when I was a freshman in college, I took this course in metaphysics, it was in the Lutheran School of Wittenberg University, taught by a Lutheran minister, priest, whatever they're called. And they were talking metaphysics about the proof, about whether there is a God or there's no proof that there is. Well, listening to all of the discussion and reading in metaphysics, I said, well, this is ridiculous. There's no God. There's nothing in metaphysics that points to any God sitting up on the throne somewhere in heaven who's going to listen to my prayers. So I became then, for all intents and purposes, an atheist. And just put anything like that completely and totally out of my life. Not antagonistically, just nothing there. As I got a little bit older and I've heard more people talk about discussions, I mean, I really tuned in to what everybody was saying in here. And I just came across this term the other day. It's called pantheism.
What?
Pantheism. And that's, it's really, there isn't a God. The universe is God. There's no differentiation between the universe and God. It is one and the same thing. And it's just like a tree has leaves. And when the leaves die and fall off, is that because the tree hates the leaves? No, it's part of the ongoing process. Even the people doing research today to improve the world, there's not a them and an us. Everything that has happened to guide us where we're at today is through God, which means people are part of God. So medicine, and I'm a nurse, and I've seen how healthcare has evolved tremendously since I first became a registered nurse in 1970. I mean, we can treat people now and keep them alive and keep them healthier and keep them better than ever could have happened 50 years ago. So does that mean these people should stop doing research because they're not God and they think they can do it better than God? No, it's because they are part of God. And everything that happens in the universe is part of God. And I have heard so many wonderful things in here that it seems to me we're all pretty much kind of on the same wavelength, little variations along the way. But I believe that that there's a God that is not God that hears my prayers. And also I'm a psychotherapist. And we have in psychotherapy what's called self-talk. You know, and that's what prayer is. Prayer and meditation is self-talk if you're doing it silently to yourself. And that doesn't go anywhere else. There's nobody else out there, in my opinion, or anything else, listening to you. It's you talking to yourself and helping you to grow and become healthier and hopefully learn more. I guess you could do the opposite as well. But basically, so that's it. Lou, I really like what you had to say. I think you kind of put everything for me in very nicely.
Okay, we're going to... Thank you. Thank you, Jeff. We're going to take a break now because it's getting to be after 8. So we'll continue.
Can you finish the circle before that?
Well, that would be good, but... I think... What probably be beneficial, we want to hear from everybody.
We do.
And we've been sitting down for a while, and I would want to invite everybody. We're going to take a 10-minute break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to continue on. Yeah. So let's take a 10-minute break. And while we're doing the break, I have something I want to put out there. We're trying to gather some images, something for the Leather Realm. And what I would like to do is that those who want to, Scott is going to take a picture of us standing up here on the stage, and we're going to do that within the 10-minute frame, and it'll just be info, but we'll get to that too. Yeah, thank you. And we're just going to take a couple of pictures, and then we're going to put that in the mix while we can come up with something for Leather Ram to put in a flyer and all that. So if you want to participate in that, meet over here. And then the other thing, who has a hat on? David, are you willing to pass the hat? The Mission Gathering Church doesn't charge us any rent for being up here, so we show like a gratuity. So we're going to pass the hat. Put anything. It's like a heart donation, love donation, whatever you see fit you want to contribute to that. And while all that's going on, let's take 10 minutes, and then we'll come back.
Yeah, and we're going to get to how kink fits into all this.
Yeah.
But for me, I always look at, all of you guys, everybody that said something here, I'm thinking Buddhist and pagan and what, there's something similar, and I always look to, my journey is to try to see what that similarity is between everybody, and I call that God, for me that's what God is, whatever that similarity, that similar energy or vision or whatever, that for me is my God. I happen to call him Jesus, and that's where my tradition is, and I like, having grown up with that tradition, I am attached to it. That doesn't mean that I live by all of their tenets, either Catholic or Lutheran. But there are certain tenets and certain things that good works that they do that I definitely relate to. And the particular church that we belong to an Evangelical Lutheran church downtown. And they are very open to the gay community, and we sought them out because they called for gay and lesbian people to come, and they've been a very welcoming community, and we've had a good journey with them.
All right.
I'm Chuck. I'm from Mission Hills. I was raised Lutheran, and I'm still a Lutheran. For those that don't know, there's two major denominations of the Lutheran Church in the United States. There's the Missouri Synod Lutheran Church and there's the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. The Missouri Synod Lutheran Church is a very conservative church. That's the church that I grew up in. However, the church I grew up in was a little bit more progressive. Not that they welcomed gay people, they just decided not to talk about it. So, which for me turned out to be a good thing, because the first time, literally, that I heard the word homosexual in my church, I was 30 years old. So at that point, I was able to handle it because I was an adult, as opposed to an 8-year-old boy who maybe feeling that they're homosexual, hearing it and having to deal with it in their own way, which they couldn't at that point. So I'm thankful for that. But it was a learning experience, and I sought out the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, which is the other denomination of the Lutheran Church, which is almost opposite on that topic. It is opposite. They welcome gay people in their church. Gay clergy are able to be married in this Lutheran church. And like Frank said, we joined the Lutheran Church downtown San Diego. Very welcoming. They're actually celebrating 25 years this year of being a Reconciling in Christ congregation, which in the Lutheran church means you have a public statement of welcome. It's the oldest church in Southern California that has that. So it's... I will say that the major thing that I get out of being in a traditional church like that is the community, because there's a great community of people that we've made there. I enjoy that. Is there heaven or hell? I don't know. I can't be sure. So I don't base my life on that. I base my life on doing what I think is good and what I think is right. And like I said, the community that I feel from being in that church is something very important to me, and that's why I'm there. And I don't have all the answers, but I'm comfortable there.
All right.
My name is Felipe. I grew up here in San Diego in the South Bay. I grew up Catholic. Kind of became a bad Catholic boy and stopped going to church after a while. I don't believe in God, but some of their didactic teachings, I guess, they stick to me. I think that's what keeps me, in line. My biggest belief is just I'm just meant to encounter people. Like there's a reason I'm meant to meet each single person, and I'm meant to experience each and everything, whether it's good or bad. Because at the end of the day, I learn from something. I grow from even the bad, and I learn to cherish the good. So I think that's just my own thing. I'm a bit of a hippie. I just kind of try to get along with everyone and just keep the flow going. So that's just me.
I'm Rob, and I live in Spring Valley, and I've had a church background. I think religion and church aren't necessarily the same thing. So I'm quite fond of some of the trappings of church, music, the architecture. As to spirituality, things that inspire me certainly are spiritual, and just think of a lovely sunset. Now, down to this life and death thing, I'm not worried about it. I'm living. And next phase I'll worry about. Now, maybe when I get close to the next phase, I'll start paying more attention, like W.C. Fields, someplace, rest home, and somebody came upon him going through the Bible and said, W.C., I thought you were an atheist. And he said, I'm looking for loopholes. Well, I might do that. Thank you.
I'll go. Magnum from University Heights. I grew up Southern Baptist, my mother's religion, that's what I call it. And from the time, probably when I was about 12, 13, I heard homosexual from the pulpit. Didn't know what it really meant, except after church I heard some people talking about, he was talking about sissies and all that. And I knew that I was different. And then I left home and went in the military about when I was 18 years old. And I had shut God off. All that because I thought it was a judging, condemning, some white man with a long beard sitting up in a chair judging me. And it wasn't really until I had a long history of drugs and alcohol, and it wasn't until I came in when I got sober. And then I got an opportunity to take some inventory about how God fit in my life, and I got a chance to create a higher power that's supportive and loving. And then that set me off on my journey. I've always been a seeker and looking. And then that's when I found the religious Church of Religious Science. And that was a really welcoming church of all walks of life. And they talked about gay people from the pulpit.
and it was very welcoming. I belonged to that church for a long time, along with creating my higher power, and then I went to a funeral service of a friend, and when I had more, no, it was her lover, she had passed away, and when I walked in, they were chanting, and they were chanting, Nam-myoho-renge-kyo, and it just, I broke into tears. It's like, wow, it really affected me. And it took me back to the movie, What's Love Got to Do with It? And Tina Turner practices this type of Buddhism. And I got, and that movie was about cause and effect, and that the causes that I make, there are effects to it. And the story with Tina Turner is that she had her, she was a, you know, was a gifted singer, but she had her issues with Ike Turner. And she couldn't seem to move through and get through all that abuse until she looked within herself and got the power out from herself, and she made different causes. And she became courageous and brave, and, you know, and the movie tells you that she overcame her fear of Ike Turner, and she ended up being an international movie star and rock star. And that's how I live my life today, is through cause and effect, and believing that it is something mystical outside of myself that's holding the planets up, that's holding us here right now. Something is larger than that, some kind of energy force. And now I'm moving, I still hold that, but now I'm moving into SM. And I see that SM is a really higher, it's a higher level. And it's, I'm taking a look at this of how I can transcend some of my fears, what I'm committed to, and a lot of self-awareness. And that's why I'm trying to incorporate my spirituality and BDSM to take me higher. So that's it.
Steve and Brian, Brian was
go. I would like you to. And I took longer than
I'm Steve from Mission Hills. I guess I would qualify as a devout agnostic, meaning I'm convinced that I don't know and may never know, period. But I've always been interested in theology, and I've studied it on my own. Christianity, just because that was the predominant one in my family and society, Catholicism, a little bit of Buddhism. The only thing that I've studied extensively, and this started about 3 years ago, and I didn't know it was a religion, was Tantra, which I thought was just a way to have really hot sex. And then I found out that it's a lot more. I think they use the hot sex to pull people in. It's an offshoot of Hinduism, I believe. So there are calls to Ganesh and Kali, and that has no meaning to me other than Ganesh is an elephant head, and I think elephants are cool. And Kali, you gotta like Kali. If you've never heard of Kali, she, to bring about change, she will cut off her own head. So that's pretty powerful. What I'm more interested in, though, are the practices, and it's dealing a lot with energy, and I do respond to that. I've also studied the body a lot and science a lot, so I have that perspective, and there's that empirical outlook. The empiricists of 100 years ago probably had very different perspectives, and I think that those who embrace science 100 years from now are going to be thinking of many different things than we are now, because probably several of the things that we are firm in our beliefs about now are going to be shown to be bunk. Because if we are the epitome of evolution at this moment, heaven help us. So, that's it.
Brian.
Well, thanks for letting me share, because I came in late at a meeting. But I lived in South Park, and I've been here since I was in Boston for 5 years. Brought up Lutheran. I think my mom goes to your church. My friend Richard goes to the Lutheran church downtown. They are very accepting, always have been, I'm glad, an accepting church. And I'm glad I was brought up that way because of, you know, being gay and some of these churches that don't accept, you know, they get punished and you have to go to church, you know, a couple nights or, you know, it's your duty to go to church. So I'm glad I was brought up kind of easy. I didn't have anything to overcome. And, you know, in the recovery meetings, I like the higher power and the spirituality of that. If it doesn't fit for you, you know, I do hear a lot of ex-Catholics and how much guilt they have, and I'm glad I didn't have to kind of deal with that. I think I have, you know, I have enough to deal with without having somebody on my shoulder saying you're bad, you know. So I'm very, very glad that spirituality is kind of easy for me in that way. I do think there's something greater than me, you know, so that's kind of where I'm at with the whole thing. I'm glad the church that I'm with or was affiliated with and still am if I went back is they changed with the Episcopalians, the St. Paul's. The ministers change back and forth. They're really quick, you know, a lot of similarities. Even the Catholic Church. At least we got the good parts from the Catholic, not the bad parts. Sorry, I'm just saying. not the guilt part of it. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you. Thank you for everyone sharing like that. Someone once said to me, you don't really know a person until you've talked to them about sex, politics, and religion. And I think we can see there's a lot of diversity here. We got, you know, atheists, agnostics, pagans, religious people, Christians, spiritual people. So there's a lot of different ways of being with this subject in life. In my own experience, since I didn't really talk about it that much, I don't have any answers. I'm a seeker. I look around too, and I believe massively in science, and that's part of what is the basis of my belief. If you look at astrophysics and you start studying molecules and suns and all this crazy shit and this universe, and then you start you start to wonder, well, this is pretty miraculous. Even Einstein said, either you think everything, you know, how do you put it? I forgot. It was a great quote. It was something like, everything is either miraculous or it's not. And I see that it is somehow or other. It just blows me away. I just got through, you know, watching that whole Cosmos series, and the whole idea that we could be, you know, I'm just a little speck of dust out in the middle of nowhere, and we've got this magnetic field and this little thin atmosphere and billions of years of history and all this thousands of years of evolution, if you believe science, and to bring us, these creatures called humans to this point where we're all sitting in a room doing art and talking about kinky sex or whatever the fuck it is. It's just, I mean, if you take it in perspective, it just kind of, it blows my mind. So I feel there's something more going on here. That's where I'm coming from. I don't have an answer, but there's definitely some stuff going on. And I think that one thing that's clear for everyone in your own experience is that you're growing and changing. Change is constant. We continue to have experiences, whether we make a choice or don't make a choice. Not making a choice is also a choice. So one of the choices we're making in this group is to explore our sexuality in different ways. And since this group is one that's about brotherhood and supporting each other and nurturing each other and helping each other grow as men, I thought it'd be important to have this subject to see how this can help you grow, you know, in on every level, on deeper levels and like that. So and like I said, there's different ways to talk about that. I'd like to hear more about the was it Butchman's experience, and also Jerry has done some reading and knows some knowledge about the different effects of doing different sexual kinky practices. Whatever you want to call it, how to put it, right?
I don't know. What do I know?
You know about it. I'm talking about the sort of the biology of it. and that kind of thing.
Stuart.
And Stuart too.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, so I don't have really much of an agenda. I was just hoping to kind of evolve because I feel like this is an essential area of life. If like again from my perspective is for religious science, we believe that God is all there is, which means that God is all things. There's nothing that can be separate. So everything in the physical universe, everything in every dimension, everything beyond that, beyond time, beyond space, whatever, it's all God. And so we're part of God, and we're living God out. And if we're infinite beings going through our processes, then that's what it is. And I don't know what the end game is, but so with that, let's see if we can bring some kink into it and see why are we here? Why is this part of our journey?
I'll start because Maggie and I had the opportunity this weekend to go to the Butchman's experience, and it was crazy. It was crazy good, and especially because I'm kind of new to the kink fetish community. Right, I've said this before, right? But my first experience really was almost spiritual. You know, it was an elevating experience at PSI, and I wanted to touch that again. And
PSI,
the relationship between fetish and elevate and being elevated.
Power, surrender, and intimacy. The body electric.
So power, surrender, intimacy is a body electric weekend.
Okay,
sorry. And so this weekend was all about, for me, I mean, it was about a whole bunch of things, but to try to bring the kink stuff here, we had an episode where we did some good flogging. We first did an episode where we took on the role of either master or slave, and we talked a whole bunch about that and about being obedient. And for me, what resonated about obedience is, right, my obedience to my God. And so there was a whole bunch of that kind of, again, I'm trying to bring that together. So the slave mastery thing, it resonated with me, with my faith. The flogging piece, you know, one of the instructors, slave master, was saying that, you know, when you're flogging, there's a, and you had said, talk about the intent, and, you know, if you're being flogged, you're not thinking about the grocery list or anything. You're thinking about, you know, that, and you're staying in that moment and staying present. And so it was all about that being present. I mean, you know, some guys I talk to, you know, it's about flogging. They think it's the next step to some kind of sexual experience, which it can be and maybe often is. But it's really, it's almost a meditative thing because, you know, when you meditate, you're supposed to stay focused and it's stay, stay, stay. And that also resonated with me. And it's a kink thing. It's flogging. I'll give Maddie a chance to speak about some of those experiences too. But we did a mummification thing, and where they wrapped me up in cellophane, gave me earplugs and a blindfold. And the thing about that is it's meditative, but it's almost the opposite of flogging. You know, flogging is like, stay there, stay there. When you're bound, your mind is free to go wherever it wants, and you can't do anything. I mean, it was more about controlling, taking my mind and having my mind calm down, and using my mind to calm down as opposed to using the flogger to calm down. I'm not sure if I'm explaining that well, but that was the difference in those two kink things. Was, you know, the flogger was forcing me to stay present. The mummification, I mean, physically kept me there, but my mind was going crazy. I mean, not only to try to stay, keep from getting an anxiety attack, you know, that here I'm mummified, but then once I was able to kind of let that all go and then just relax and then take that experience to another level.
It sounds like what you're describing is a comparison of contemplative versus meditative. Flogging, you're focused on one thing, and that's where the focus is. That's what you're contemplating. How is it affecting it? How are you doing it right? How is it being received? So forth. Whereas when you were mummified and then the mind was able to wander.
It's like sensory depth.
Yeah, yeah, sensory deprivation. I don't know if you were focused on anything, maybe your breathing, and then all these thoughts just occurred because you had nothing else, no other reference point.
Curious to say contemplative, because we practice contemplative prayer,
right.
And that is, you know, your mind drifts, you know, but it's all about your soul and it's all your head, right? Your mind drifts, but you bring it back and you focus. And your mind drifts and you bring it back and you focus. But it's all here, different from the flood or something that's, you know, that's physically bringing you back. So it was a great weekend. I would recommend it highly.
Yeah, I highly recommend it, and it's in the works of they have a Bushman's Experience, they call it On the Road, and that's my project for 2015, is to bring Bushman's Experience to San Diego. So if you want to experience that, we can experience all that together. What I got from it was about being authentic, and I was sitting here from the church, like Jesus Christ, the stories, he was authentic. He knew who he was. He did, you know, from the stories, he healed people, he loved people, and he knew who he was. And he was willing to die for it. That's what I got from the Bushman's Experience, is from all my whole life, especially coming into this kink thing, I have a whole lot of voices and people, and mainly it's in my head, that Magnum, what you're doing, this is crazy, you could get arrested, you can't, you know, all this negative stuff. And what I got from the Bushman's Experience is that for me to step into what's authentic for me. And all those other voices that's in my head is this, he used an analogy like up in the choir, is to go up in the choir and choke all those sopranos who's screaming, you know, you shouldn't be doing this. And it's like a process of moving all over so I can clearly see who I am. And I'm here to embrace my SM, and how what I got from that weekend is for me to step into, be obedient to myself and have a tribe. They talked a lot about tribe, and you said that tribe is that I have all the tools. I have all the tools, learning from you all, the play parties, the discussions, to keep moving my life forward, to fully express who I am and what I want and how I want to be. And they set this up with the master-slave dynamic, is that innately, a person who is a slave, they know it deep in themselves. And I'm not talking about 12 years a slave and all that stuff, because that wasn't consensual. So, you know, it had to switch my mind from that. And it's about being obedient, like, yes, no matter what, and to trust somebody else. And that's what Frank is about. What I got is the intimacy part. Is to like really trust somebody to exchange energy, like with the flogger, is to actually flog and have that flogger take a life of his own and bring a result from the person that I'm, you know, they distinguish top, bottom, and submissive in the top. For me, the top, to bring out discipline, to bring out affirmation. And I tell you, it worked. We played today and I tried that on, and boy, it's like I was like, you know, I've always thought that the bottom would be getting all the enjoyment or getting the transcendence. I got that by being focused, contemplating, and sending power and sending love, and it was really transformative. And that's what I want to get from my BDSM, is to be authentically me. Wow. Right now, yeah, and more later.
I know one of my first experience being flogged was what, you know, Stuart had mentioned. I had a mystical experience. You know, whether it's the endorphins running, and I know there's something going on in the brain, the chemicals, something I never expected to even happen at that time was at a PSI, power surrender, intimacy, you know, so we're already comfortable with each other, it's a safe environment, you know, we kind of know each other, and my, you know, and the flogging experience went on for, well, I don't know, 45 minutes, something like that, where in the beginning it was, you know, very erotic, and then it moved into very animalistic, where I was howling like a wolf, and then it went into, at the end, because they could do a lot of breath work. So it's really changing the chemistry in your body. The endorphins are really flowing. The energy's running. And then all of a sudden, my father, who had been dead for 20 years, had come to visit me. And I just started to cry. And I didn't know where this had come from, how this happened, but it's sort of that mystical experience, you know, that energy. What it is, I have no idea. But he had been dead for a minute, he came to visit me. I said, I still don't know what it is today, you know, but wow, what an experience I was never expected to get out of that weekend. And I know the person flogging me at the time also had their own experience, something very different from doing that, from being that position. So it was an incredible weekend. I would say, okay, how do I do that again? Because that can also be addictive, getting to that. And it's just, and I've not expressed it quite that way. I know there's other ways of getting there, but that was just an incredible experience through this work that, you know, is so interesting on both ends. And this was just receiving. That was the first time I've ever been flogged, and then I flogged later, and it's just, it was an incredible experience. And what is that? I don't know. Mm-hmm. But it was amazing.
And, yeah, and what Jerry was saying, also with spirituality that I got, that I've been getting, that it, like, I got clear on it, is about ritual as well. And we had a needle, we had that needle demo that we had a couple of months ago, and I'm going to tell you the truth, I was terrified of needles. It was like, ain't no damn way somebody going to stick a needle up in me. And I transcended because, and what was different about it is that, you know, at the demo, the person that's leading the demo, he's just giving us information. You know, that's what we set the demo up for. But at the Bushman's experience, it was like the flog swarm. They had drumming. They had a piece to put it all in context. And then when it was my turn to get pierced, I got pierced, and it was that it? You know, and so my mind with ritual and doing something over or setting it up, for me, had me transcend all those fears, and so I'm able to grow. So now it's like I'm ready to go get me a 20-pack of, 20-gauge, It's like it was really transcendent, and what Frank was saying about the mummification, it just took me to another place. So for me, the tribe, to get all my tools, to move me forward, the ritual, and the intimacy. Mm-hmm. And exchanging of power and being intimate, and that's very spiritual for me. It's
trusting.
Trusting. Very spiritual for me.
And would you say, and I'm speaking from my own an experience I had, is that this kind of a process can be very empowering for the individual.
Oh, yeah.
And to walk away from it transformed and changed. So, has anyone else had these kind of experiences in this group? You want to talk about it?
Well, I can compare. I've been on the other end of a flogger and I've seen the tail often enough. And what I would compare it with are two other activities that I've done. One is in surfing, being tubed. When you're surfing and being tubed, if you're standing on the beach watching the person, are you all familiar?
You said surfing?
Being tubed. Okay. If you're surfing and you're going sideways to the beach, parallel to the beach,
right.
The waves are coming over your head, so when you're inside of it, you're looking down a long cylindrical tube of water.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's called being tubed and surfing. And you see it on TV a fair amount with surfers and such. But if you're standing on the beach watching that, you're a spectator. Mm-hmm. It is loud, it is violent, it is scary, and you wonder how they survive.
Right.
When you're on the inside of it, your senses do something very different. It is as quiet as you will ever, a quiet you will never hear. You just, it's dead quiet, and you're because you can't screw this up. It really is bad. If you screw it up, screwing up inside there
right.
is better
right.
than I, just
right.
not there.
Right.
Bad place to screw things up. So the intense focus, all of a sudden the senses shut down that aren't needed, and the focus comes to you, and you can't be thinking of anything else. You can't, I'm telling you, you cannot think of anything else, unless you're a professional surfer, in which case you're probably thinking about a lot of other things. But if you're an amateur surfer, you've got to focus on that. You've got to do it right, or it will have a very bad ending. I also would liken it to being a motorcycle rider and riding on the twisties, meaning the curves and mountains and all that kind of thing, and taking them at a fairly good speed, not totally life-risking, but you, again, have to pay attention. And so the focus in those two activities and the ability to clear your mind because you have no other choice is very refreshing. So I would say I walk away from all three of those because I focused and I used only senses I needed. I heard only what I needed to hear. My brain was only working on that single task, even if it was in survival mode, whatever the reason. And I think you're in survival mode sometimes when you're on the other end of a flogger or a whip or doing something new in S&M. It's all very similar to me. And it also makes me wonder, for reasons I don't know, but I wonder about people who've been in the military and seen combat, who come home and can't find a place and want to go back there. Because the camaraderie, the brotherhood, of course, the excitement, and the focus, and what they get out of it, if you see some of the interviews of these guys, that they experience the similar kind of single-minded focus of, because they have to survive. And so I look at all of this as close as you can take yourself to, I don't want to say fight or flight or survival or not survival, but as many of your senses and extraneous information as you can eliminate, I believe brings you closer to something. I'm not going to say God, because you have to fill in the blank. Whatever that blank is, you fill that in. But the more of that you get out of your mind, the closer you become to that thing, you fill in one.
Like transcendence. The Walenda that went over the Grand Canyon on light on network TV, he walked the wire, and when he finished, he was just like praising God or Jesus or something. It was like he had a whole religious thing doing on camera.
I remember that show where he was walking across Niagara Falls on the tightrope, and he said, did all the praise Jesus stuff, and I couldn't help but savor the irony that he was 33 years old, which is the accepted age usually assumed that Jesus was when he was crucified.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, what you're touching on, I think, you know, when you're on the edge of life and death, at some point, it really makes you focus. It's like where you realize your mortality and how precious it is, your life. And I think that's kind of probably how I would translate it. And, you know, it's like people that are thrill seekers, probably. They're pushing to the edge. Trying to get that sense of mortality or victory over whatever, I guess. But probably that sense of focus.
So I think one thing that I'm hearing from this is you come out more empowered and confident and maybe have faith of some kind. And then you can take these things into other parts of your life and can be successful in, I don't know what, your career, your relationships, or in some other area.
Yeah, I think SM, for me, helps, is part of that to move me.
Yeah. It helps you grow as a man. Mm-hmm. And yeah. One thing that is missing in our culture is that we don't have a system to grow a man. You know, people are just, you know, you graduate from high school or you turn 21 and you can drink. But that's not becoming a man. And we don't have the kind of rights and brotherhood to support people in that. Jay?
In the military, I was in Vietnam, and I always focused on myself. Because you can't make a mistake because you're in charge of men. And you have to be right 99% of the time. You always have to be right. You cannot be wrong. So you have to believe in yourself. And you always have to believe in yourself. Period.
Not that you, I'm not asking if you miss Vietnam, but do you miss that challenge?
I miss the clarity of it.
I talked to my dad the other day, Father's Day, and he was talking about being in the military, being in Korea, and he said every day he walked up the hill, another hill, knowing that was the day he was going to die.
No,
he always had it in his mind, this is the day. And he always survived, fortunately for me. And him, obviously. But, yeah, I mean, he actually valued that experience. Mm-hmm. Being there.
I think that, you know, the first time I was given a good flogging, after it, you know, it was a similar kind of thing. It was like I survived that. And it was similar, but I left that experience saying, I did that. You know, I wouldn't, you know, I would imagine people that jump out of planes or do those other kind of things, they uh-huh. leave that experience saying, holy crap, I can't believe uh-huh. I just did that mm-hmm. and I survived. Uh-huh. And that was a flogging experience for me. And I think that's kind of the thing that I take away anyway from any of this, and that's why I'm kind of wanting to kind of engage in that stuff again, is because that's what I left, that's what I leave with, is, you know, I did it, you know. Granted, there are all other kind of things in there, endorphins and all those other things that make you feel good about it, but that for me was one of those mind things that happened, was I survived it, and, you know, because growing up, I was kind of the weak little kid, you know, you can't do that, you know, you're sissy, and you're not able to do this and that, and I believed that. Mm-hmm. And so for me to go through something like a good flogging and say, I survived that, and, you know, it was cool, and I actually felt good about it, that was crazy good for me.
So in a way, some of this stuff can replace what the military, because I tried to come up with another way that we develop man or have a brotherhood in this country, and the only thing we have is the military. And it does do some of that kind of stuff. And obviously being in war can create a situation where you're very intent and have a lot of attention. But can we create that without having to be in the military or to be at war and have experiences that heighten your awareness and give you confidence and develop a sense of brotherhood? I think we can with this group, which was part of my agenda with this talk.
I think it's happening right now, you know, with the group, it's a brotherhood and having these discussions, and then at the end of the month we have, it's like M16 training. So at the end of this month, I mean next week, we'll be having some hands-on of how to work a machine gun, which is how to restrain someone. And the tribe here sets it's the curriculum, and that's what I like what we came up with at the planning meeting, is to have an academy. And then we'll cover one subject, and then at the end, we bring it all together, which will transcend me, and hopefully along with everybody else, to the next level and to the next, and to fully express if you're receiving or if you're giving, and that's why I keep staying here. You know, even if I come here and I'm the only one here, I'll sit up here with a flogger in my hand. I'll flog my own damn self, you know? Or I'll flog that chair or something. But that's what I get, and a sense of awareness of myself and my body. And Jerry mentioned it, and I want to highly recommend, Riley came here, if you wasn't here, for Body Electric. If you have not had the Body Electric experience, that set me off on this journey that I could get intimate with my own body and get intimate with another man's body and exchange breath, and it moved me to where I am now. So I highly recommend Body Electric. And when are they having a BE coming up, like?
September.
Mm-hmm. So go on the website, bodyelectric.org.
Body Electric School.
Bodyelectricschool.org. Something like that. You got the key words. Okay.
This afternoon.
And then I'm going to try to start a lending library. And I got a few books that has helped me along the way on my journey. Everybody heard of, and you may frown, you heard of Eckhart Tolle. I have that. So if you want to see me on the side, I'll lend. And just a few more I'll put out there, and then we'll close. This really helped me. The Ties That Bind by Guy Baldwin. It tells a lot about SM kink. It answered a lot of questions for me, that book. And then this is the history everybody have heard about urban aboriginals. If you haven't read that, that's like how the kink talks about the military, the history, how it moved up to San Francisco and all those clubs, the catacombs and all that. It explains that in this book. Very helpful. Very helpful book. And then one more. I brought a whole damn bag of shit. All right. About archetypes. King, warrior, magician, lover. Very. Talks about all the archetypes, the positive archetypes, and the opposite of that. I recommend that book, too. And then some other ones everybody knows about, the Four Agreements, all those books. They really helped me along my way. So you got any closing, whatever?
No.
You want some other titles?
Okay. Titles, well, this I wrote is more book.
Books.
Oprah's,
There's an interesting one called Sacred Pain. It's a more detailed read, but it talks about that people have been doing this for centuries. You look at all the mystics that have been out there. They've been doing this. This is nothing new. And so he goes into that. It's very academic, so it could be a little dry reading, but it's interesting for that. The Gay Body by Mark Thompson, he has a fisting experience in here where he had a very mystical experience. He talks about that in here, his first time he's been fisted. And so that's in here, so that's really fascinating, very similar to that title. The Marquis de Sade, Thomas More, who wrote... Care of the Soul. He talks to take the Marquis de Sade's work and translate it so it's not quite as dry into Dark Eros. So there's also interesting in that.
Yeah.
What other goodies do I have in here? Tied That Bind, I had Philosophy in the Dungeon, The Magic of Sex and Spirit. It's an interesting read. And then Gay Soul, Defining the Heart and the Gay Spirit in Nature. With Mark Thompson as well. So there's some other interesting titles on this topic that if people are interested in, it's out there.
Yeah. And Looking for Mr. Benson, there's another one I found out on the weekend, when we did The Weekend. That's another good book. Go ahead.
No, I don't have anything. I think that, it went well. And
I want to let me just say that.
Yes.
I feel this was one of the best group sessions so far. I think people really, really dug deep on it.
Yeah.
And I've gotten to know people a little bit more. I think what you said about you don't get to know people until you talk about religion, politics, and what was it?
Sex.
Yes. Don't forget that sex.
We talk a lot about sex, but we won't get into politics because that would break the group right now.
The interesting thing for me is I was actually kind of almost wondering, it could go one way or another, and I think it went really, really well.
All right.
Thank you.
Spirit.
Deep thinkers.
All right. Spirit did move.
Yep.
All right. Don't forget the demo, sign up, go to signmeupforevent@gmail.com. I'd like to see everyone there. I'm going on a road trip, speaking of spirituality, to Sedona. I'm going to do some vortexing in a Jeep, and then on to Albuquerque, and then I'll be back, and hopefully I will be there next Wednesday, and if not, Kobe will be hosting, doing the host and doing everything. So please go and support Kobe for the restraint demo.
And just so you know, that Gmail, it's you're writing an email saying you'll
right, RSVP.
Because I'm looking for a website.
Right, okay.
I just figured that out.
Right.
So it's kind of like, you're just writing a letter saying I will be here.
So how about can we stand up in a circle? We can do it. All right.
I'm
okay, so we'll talk about all that offline. This is what I want to offer. So JP, he wants to do a benediction, and what I would like for us to do is all stand up, and we circle up.
That's right. Atheists and agnostics.
Yeah, if you want to participate.
Use the God word. Well, get no hands.
Hands.
I if you want to do it.
Whatever you want to do.
Come
do it.
Lots of touching.
So we're coming together one more time in this circle, this special, amazing circle of men, and this circle representing that circle of life, the eternal life, the infinite life of the universe. Whatever name you want to give it, we know that it is powerful and that we are expressions of it. We are stardust, we are magical, and we are magnificent. I claim our good today, and then I will accept that Spirit was here, or whatever you want to call it, supporting us in growth in consciousness for whatever purpose, and we know it's good. And I accept and give thanks for this time together, and know that this community is powerful. It's supporting each and every one, and I am thankful for Fetishman San Diego, and so it is.
Aho.
No.
Right. And that's not L.A. ho. That's like a ho-ho. All right. Let's give it up for J.P.